Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What if the most dangerous thing you do every day is something you barely think about? Driving. And according to today's guest, Steve Janik, most drivers aren't nearly as safe as they think they are. In fact, he says the biggest cause of accidents isn't speed or weather, it's distraction. And it's happening constantly. Steve knows this firsthand. After surviving life-threatening accidents and spending years teaching defensive driving to thousands of students, he's made it his mission to change how we think behind the wheel. In his book, How's My Driving?, he lays out a powerful message. You get no do-overs when driving. Today, he's sharing simple but eye-opening strategies that can protect you, your family, and everyone else on the road. If you drive even once a day, you need to hear this conversation. The author of How's My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue, Steve Janik, is our guest on This Week in America. Steve, welcome to the program. An important message. Great to have you with us on the show today.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate being here.
So much to talk about. And let's start with the talking about driving defensively. We hear that a lot, yet it's something we need to really do more frequently. Is there anything we can do to drive defensively on a continuing basis?
Yes. First off, you have to have an appreciation for what can go wrong. Now, a simple look at the news periodically, and you can see it happening in airplanes. You can see it happening in cars. Understand that there's a lot of danger associated with moving big pieces of equipment around. And you have to understand that your safety is at stake while you're driving the car. So you're not responsible also for disabling somebody else for the rest of their life, which would be a horrible thing to have to live with. One of the crashes that I was involved in, my wife was 6 months pregnant, and we lost the child to the car crash.
So sorry.
And, thank you very much. But it is really one of those things that, they said it wasn't my fault. Okay. And I could explain the whole thing to you. But what does fault mean? It means that you didn't do anything that you didn't do the things that you could have done to have prevented it. And so, like I said, I got to live with the knowledge that we don't have a daughter that we would have had.
It's that kind of message that motivates you as you get behind the wheel. And if people have gone through that or need to think more about people who have gone through that as they get behind the wheel and start driving. In the book, you've got 10 principles that need to be applied to driving safety awareness. Talk about those, how important those are. And again, these are things that we all need to be aware of every time we open the door and get behind the wheel.
Okay, well, I'll just put them in the order that I developed them when I was writing the book. First one is to understand that nobody, and I believe this with all of my heart, nobody gets up in the morning, brushes their teeth, and goes out and decides to drive and be the worst driver on the road. They don't do that. What they should do, though, is go out and try to be the best driver on the road. The second principle is that the person that you ought to be concerned the most about safety is yourself. Because if you keep yourself safe when you're driving around, there's a good possibility that you're not going to hurt anybody else. The third one is understanding that purpose for driving is to get from point A to point B safely. It's not to have a party while you're going from point A to point B, because sometimes people do that and it's distracted driving and it gets them in trouble. One of the other things is this is kind of interesting. What's obvious to you is not necessarily obvious to me, and vice versa. Favorite analogy I like to think of is the cup of water being half full or half empty.
Yes.
And it's whether you're a pessimist or an optimist, But that's one of the things that is one of the principles. Understand that crash-free driving helps set me up more easily for crashes. That sounds counterproductive. The reality is that if you go out and you drive around and nothing ever happens, your awareness of what could happen is going to be, it's going to be degraded. And one of the things that happened here recently, it's about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, in LaGuardia Airport, there was a jet coming in for a landing, and the tower cleared a fire engine to cross the runway that he was landing on. And the two pilots died. And here's the thing that I imagine in my, when I'm thinking about things like this, I imagine in my mind's eye that the fire engine driver getting ready to pull on an active runway had done it 80,000 times and nothing ever happened. And so then they just pulled out in front of a jet.
Yes.
Because of the speeds that they're traveling, and you can't do anything about it. But safety all the time has to be at the top of your brain. Understand that driving slower than traffic around me may be the reason for an accident. I had a friend of mine who I used to carpool with, and he prided himself on how slowly he drove. And I kept telling him, you're back in traffic up.
Yes.
And it would be nothing to have, 10 or 12 cars behind us. And what that does is it incites people into making bad decisions.
Yes.
And so I never was purely 100% able to get him to change his habits, but I tried to talk him into it. The eighth one is understand that stopping properly for a yellow light or orange light, whatever you call it, because the requirements for stopping for a yellow light are identical to the requirements for a red light. There's one caveat, and it says that if you can't do it safely, and you're allowed to go through the yellow light. People take that as, I'm going to stomp on the gas pedal and get through there.
Yes.
And if you make it through there and you get away with it, you can wind up having an accident as a result of it. Understand that discourteous behavior to other drivers is actually selfish thinking. And there's no really good reason why you have to be selfish. We all have one planet. And then finally, understand that if you see someone doing something clearly wrong, and you do everything in your power to feed it back to them. It's not always possible, obviously, because I'm not going to race somebody down and pull them over and try and force feed them into some good information. But in any case, those are the 10 basic premises that I came up with in the book as I was writing it.
All so interesting, and all in Steve's book, How Is My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue. The book is available wherever books are sold. Steve Jadak is our guest on the program. His last name is spelled DZIADIK. So if you're Googling it, you need that. Going to his website is Steve, DZIADIK.com. That link is on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. All you have to do is go there, click it, and it'll take you there to get information on Steve and the book as well. As you're talking about that, the fact that maybe you get a little cocky over the years, you haven't had an accident, so you think you're doing everything right. I was in a situation where I was doing everything right, got T-boned by a car that ran a red light, guy had been drinking, and took out the car. And that's changed the way that I've been driving ever since. My wife is often mentioning, you're a whole different driver after that. Going through that, the trauma of being in the car, the sights, the smells, the sounds, all of that. Does that work that way for many people, that once you've been in an accident, you're much more cautious, maybe overly cautious as a driver?
Well, it should make you more cautious because if you think about it, what happened that you didn't see it coming?
Yes.
It should make you more cautious. But the unfortunate part about it is that people, they go, that was close, and then they forget about it. I've been involved in two nearly life-ending crashes, and you would think that the first one, in which we lost a child, and I already told you about that. You would think that that would have changed my attitude for driving forever. And it did. About 9 years later, though, I was driving to work with some friends of mine. We were carpooling at night. And I was talking with a friend of mine in the car. And I looked at him and I looked back and I saw the front end of a Ford Bronco in my lane coming at me head on. And that's the last thing I remember. Till waking up face down in the middle of the highway.
Wow.
Again, should have died. People don't usually live in head-on collisions. But you have to be, you have to understand that that those things should change and motivate you to address the whole activity of driving with more caution and care. You literally have to do that, because if you don't do it, then you're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah, when I go through an intersection now, I will slow down if I see another car and make sure they are going to stop and let me go through. It really gets your attention. Let's focus on distractions, and that seems to be at the root of so many of the accidents that we read about. What constitutes distracted driving, and why do people do it, especially when we keep telling them not to do it?
Well, people have the tendency to go in and they think that because they can drive. I mean, when they first start driving, I've had a driving school and I trained a lot of teenagers and even people who were older that hadn't driven before, and they were scared to death until they got out on the highway and figured out, hey, you know what? I can do this. But they what they have a tendency to do, though, is if they can get away with driving and being distracted, then they'll do it and let it happen more often. It's not that they're doing it on purpose, because they don't want to have a crash, but they let themselves drop their guard. I'll give you an example of, and this just happened to me about 4 weeks ago. I was coming home from church. And I was hungry, so I stopped in McDonald's, and I ordered a Big Mac and French fries and a Coke, and I pulled over into the parking space, and I was getting ready to eat it, and I don't know why I memorized this, but two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles on a sesame seed bun.
Yes.
I don't know why. I still remember that, but. One of the thing about that sauce is it's on both sides of a middle bun, and when you bite down on it, what it has a tendency to do is lubricate the middle bun and launch it. And I did that. Unfortunately, I had a bag on it in my lap. But I always tell people, don't eat while you're driving, because if you bite down and part of the sandwich goes into your lap, where are your eyes going to go? It's
Yeah,
just
exactly.
automatic. You're going to look at that, and plus, if it's then you're going to try and fix the problem without stopping. So, it's just they don't know. A lot of times, they don't know they shouldn't do it. That's especially true with teenage drivers. There's also a group of people who think that they can actually do it without sacrificing safety, and that's just not true.
Well, they think that until something goes wrong, like the lubricated middle bun, and then all of a sudden they've got a problem, and they're trying to deal with it. But when things go right, you probably can handle that to an extent. But when it goes wrong, it really goes sideways quickly, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and there's something called a Coke bottle blind spot. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before.
No.
Let's say that you're driving along and you have a Coke or whatever drink you have in a can, and you're driving with one hand on the steering wheel and one hand on the can, and you tip it up to
Ah,
take a
okay,
drink.
yes.
Okay, and when you do that, it blocks your view a little bit, but the more you the empty the can gets, the farther up it goes
Yes.
until your hand is actually blocking your eyesight. And that's the moment when a kid's going to walk in front of you, or a bicyclist is going to be there, or a car is going to stop suddenly. And it's really, you can't do this stuff without sacrifice and safety, and you just need to be aware of it.
Yeah, I never really thought about that until you mentioned that. I could see where you were going with that. That yes, that is an obstacle. We don't get a lot of help in some cases from the automotive industry. They give us bigger screens that are going, and they say these are basically for the enjoyment of the passengers. Video is now being used where you've got video on the main monitor. How do you deal with that? Because you're tempted to peek away for a few seconds and take a look at the screen, and that's all it takes to lose control.
Well, if I'm the driver, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to be consciously helping people help me stay safe. There's something called riding shotgun. I don't know if you've ever
Oh,
heard of it or not.
yes.
And I always ask the question of my students, what does it mean to ride shotgun? And 100% of them say it means to ride in the front seat next to the driver. And I say, okay, but why do they call it shotgun? And they say, well, I never really thought about it. Well, it comes from the Old West. The mode of transportation that existed before cars was stagecoaches. And stagecoach was drawn by six horses. Driver was up on top, and his job was to drive those horses to avoid the really big rocks and holes in the road so that it was as comfortable a ride as possible. But that also, he couldn't do anything as far as providing safety. So if robbers pulled up next to him on horses, he had no option but to do what they said. So what they did is they put another man up there with a shotgun. And the shotgun was there to dissuade people from being involved in trying to steal your goods. Shotgun is a really impressive way to not you don't want to have the thing pointed at you, and then if somebody pulls the trigger, you're going to get hit with something. And but that when people started driving in cars, they naturally everybody was familiar with the term shotgun, so they called it. And the idea was is if you're going to be a shotgun rider, you're going to be there to help keep everybody else safe in the car. But today, it's so far removed that people don't have a clue that what riding shotgun means. And I always try to tell them, listen, if you're going to ride shotgun, understand it's your responsibility to provide a safety margin for everybody else in the car too.
And it's okay to speak up and to assist
Absolutely.
in any way that you can. The book is How's My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue. Steve Janik is the author. Book available wherever books are sold. His website is Steve, and that last name is DZIADIK.com. We've got that on a website, thisweekinamerica.us. Mentioned several times having people in the car. You talk very emphatically about driving should never be treated as a social activity. How often are distractions the people in the car that we're trying to carry on a conversation with? Unless you're really good at multitasking, when you're talking, it does diminish a little bit the attentiveness that you have behind the wheel.
Well, one of the things you have to recognize is that walking is multitasking. Driving a car is multitasking.
Yes.
So to add stuff to a multitasking environment is to reduce your ability to do any one of the other tasks as effectively as you could. So I always tell everybody, if you've got somebody in the car with you that is trying to get you to look at their phone or whatever, you gotta pull over and sit down and talk with them. Listen, do you understand that you're affecting my safety? And help them help you. Otherwise, bad things happen. And I know that from personal experience.
How should the reader consider the use of turn signals, other safety devices on the average car? Talk about, sometimes you think in that the car that was just in front of me, the turn signals must have been an option because he's in and out of traffic and never uses a turn signal. And sometimes maybe do we become too reliant on some of the safety factors in the new cars out there?
Well, I think that the most important safety device on a car is the turn signals. Because one of the things that we didn't go over, but there's a something called a safe defensive driving recipe that I have and I share in the book, and it stands for it's a six letter acronym. It stands for search, identify, predict, decide, execute, and repeat. And so that in order for you to be able to predict what somebody's going to do, they have to be giving you some kind of indication that they're going to do something. If they're not using their turn signals, then how do you know? You guess. And my guesser doesn't work nearly as good as my, if somebody uses their turn signals.
Exactly. And as you're driving, if you use those, that's indicating to somebody what you're going to drive and keeping both of you people safe as you go through that maneuver. It's something you address in the book, but we're always concerned about the blind spot. You've got that area where you're never quite sure what's going on there, and you've got just a couple of seconds to make a decision. How can the reader set up the mirrors to eliminate that blind spot, and is that even possible?
Yes, it is. I drive with my mirrors set up all the time, and I don't have a blind spot. The reason I don't is because I know what I'm doing in setting my mirrors up. And one of the bad things about most people when they first start driving is they see the car behind them and you can see the whole car. And so as the car comes up and starts to go around you, it starts to leave the rearview mirror and it starts to enter your side view mirrors, which most often are set up too far in. And then what it does is it clears that side view mirror, and before you see it out of the side of your eye, you've got a blind spot, and that's when crashes happen. So the way to do it is to set your mirrors up, and this takes a lot of practice. I mean, it took me about, oh gosh, after I had a head-on collision, it took me about 4 months to get this to the point where I was super comfortable in driving with my mirrors and so that they're set up with no blind spot. But what you do is you sit in your seat in your normal sitting position, and you wiggle the mirror over to the dashboard. And usually what you do is you set it so that you can you can see your entire back window. That lets you see every car behind you.
Yes.
The side view mirrors then are set up to most people think to be able to see the sitting in your normal position, see the side of your car. And that's not what they're there for. I know where the side of the car is. I don't need to see it in my side view mirror.
Yes.
So what we do is this has to be done while you're sitting parked, is I lean my shoulder against the door and my head up against the window, and then I adjust the mirror out so I can just barely see the back door handle. And then when I sit back, I no longer can see the back door handle. And that's okay, because I know where the back of the car is. And the same thing for the right side. You lean over about the same amount, set up the mirror so you can just barely see the back of your door handle. And then when you sit back up straight, you've now got mirrors that are set up to allow you to see the car or a portion of the car. That's the big problem when they first start driving. They see all of the car in the rearview mirror, and they expect to be able to see all of the car in the side view mirror. You don't need to see all of the car. If you see a bumper, you know where the rest of the car is.
All of that is in the book, How's My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue. The issues that you have, maybe that you take for granted, suddenly Steve is pointing out the problems that can go wrong, and he's addressing them in the book. The book, by the way, was featured in the New York Times Book Review. That's part of the supplement Sunday edition of the New York Times, considered one of the most significant book reviews in the business. The book was featured there. Has done remarkably well. Steve knows what he's talking about, been through this, the fact that he's taught thousands of students how to safe driving, sold the driving school so he can devote full time to the book and being out talking to people. One thing that you discuss in the book, and we hear this all the time, but for some it doesn't seem to register, reaction time. How does it relate to the following distance when driving on roadways? And sometimes I'll think about that, what they tell me as I'm approaching a car. And it seems like I can brake and I'm going to stop like immediately. And that's not the case, is it? You don't stop immediately.
No, it's not. You first off have to recognize that you need to stop. That's, if we go back to that search, identify, predict, decide, execute, repeat, the first four parts, search, is a function of taking a picture of the world, kind of a snapshot of the world. Then identify the things that could be a problem to you or you to them. Then predict what those things are going to be doing. And based on your prediction, and that's especially difficult for teens because they don't have a lot of experience. They get it as time goes by, but they don't have a lot of experience. So predicting what the cars are going to do is kind of tough. And then you decide what you're going to do on the basis of that. Those first four things all take place inside your brain. Okay. And during those first four things, that takes about 3/4 of a second brain time. Then you're not doing anything to the car except you're getting ready to execute your decision, which would be to get your foot off the gas and move it over to the brake.
Yes.
And muscle reaction time is about 3/4 of a second as well. And then when you finally get your foot on the brake, then it takes about a half a second to fully apply the brakes. So all of that adds up to about 2 seconds. And with the roads being dry and no sand on them or whatever, 2 seconds behind a car is a good distance to drive, because what it does is it gives you adequate, depending on, and when the way you do it real quick is you set up your distance between the car in front of you and the car behind, or your car, and you set that up so it's constant. And then what I do is I pick one of those little road dashes, and when the car in front of me goes past one of those road dashes, I start counting in seconds. And I use 1/1000, 2/1000.
Okay.
And but when I go past the same road dash, I should be well beyond 2 seconds. And that gives me adequate time. If it's raining out, I double it or triple it. And the idea, because if you don't have adequate time to stop or adequate space to make the decision in and do it, you're going to wind up rear-ending somebody.
And it's so difficult, because if you take your eye off the car in front of you for even a second, you could miss the brake lights coming on and cut into that reaction time dramatically. There are so many other issues. I highly recommend the book, How's My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue. Steve Jadek is our guest on the program. Take a minute here or so at the end, because this is important as well. You've got a chapter on Automobile Insurance 101. And so often that's not something we fully think through, and it's not like just repairing a bumper anymore. Included in the bumper are all sorts of electronics, and it's very expensive. Talk about why you included a chapter in the book on insurance.
Well, I sold insurance. I worked for an insurance company for about 7 years, and I sold automobile insurance. And one of the things that I found out was when people would come in, the only thing they were really interested in doing was lowering their premium.
Yes.
Because it's, I don't want to spend money if I don't have to. Well, the thing of it is that you get what you pay for. And if you don't understand what that is or what you need, then, and I'll give you a real quick example. I was sitting in my office one day, and this 55-year-old man comes in, and he's plops down in the chair in front of me and says, I want to reduce my rates. I said, okay. I said, let's do this. Let's pull up your policy. I'll see what you got, and then we'll talk through it so you know what you can and can't do. And he says, fine. So I pulled up his policy, and I looked at it, and it was all minimum coverage. And I said, well, it's clear to me that you don't have any assets. And he said, what do you mean? I said, no, based on the coverage that you have almost no protection for any assets, so you must not have any. He says, I own two apartment buildings. I said, are you serious?
Wow.
He said, yeah. And I said, do you realize that a little girl walks out and falls down and breaks her leg, and you don't own those apartment buildings anymore? So it was amazing because his whole philosophy changed once I said that. And we wound up writing him a whole bunch more policies. He spent probably another $1,000 every 6 months. But he realized the value of it at that point. Now it made sense to him. And most people don't get that. And so what I did is I wrote a section on Insurance 101 so that you could understand what is property and casualty, what is liability, what is a collision, all the things that are on your insurance policy, but that you need to understand so you can have the adequate insurance. And if it's not there when you get in a crash, you can't get it.
Boy, there's so much valuable information, potentially life-saving information in Steve's book, How's My Driving? Why Every Other Driver Doesn't Seem to Have a Clue. Book available wherever books are sold. Steve Zadik has been our guest on the program. That's DZIADIK. His website is named SteveDZIAK.com. You have to remember spelling that because we've got it all spelled out for you on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You can go there, get information on the book, link directly to Steve's website, and go from there. Steve, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. So much good information, and it reminds us that every time we get behind the wheel, it's a whole new experience. In fact, your mantra is driving safely is no accident, and I love that. We have to give it the thought it deserves because we hold our safety and many others in line as we're driving. A very important book, a very important message. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It has been our pleasure. My thanks to Auctorum House for arranging our conversation today. Empowering authors, crafting excellence, your ideal partner in the journey toward literary success, auctorumhouse.com. You can listen to this broadcast and all of them on 28 different podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and more. Also available Facebook, LinkedIn, and beyond. And be sure to look us up on YouTube.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.